Are you listening to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other platform where you can leave a rate or review? Do you like what we're doing? If the answer to all of that is yes, please consider quickly giving us a 5-star rate. And if you wouldn't mind leaving us a nice review, we greatly appreciate that as well. Okay, let's do this.
Hello, welcome to the Ghosts of Harrenhal. My name's Simon.
And I'm McKelly.
Thank you for joining us for episode 175 of our chapter-by-chapter book review of A Song of Ice and Fire by George Martin. Today we'll be discussing chapter 31 of A Storm of Swords, that's Jamie 4.
And as always, we're going to chat about the chapter and try not to spoil any future plot points for you, and hopefully we're going to provide you some entertainment along the way.
We'll summarize what happened, discuss our thoughts on it, provide some useful background, compare it to the television show, indulge in a little pedantry, and cover some relevant news and listener correspondence. Be sure to check out the show notes. They'll provide you some additional information about the characters and geography of this chapter. How are you, McKelly?
I'm good. I this week produced my first non-GOH podcast.
Wait, hang on now.
I know, right? Yeah.
Will you still record with me when you're famous?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to affect my fame and fortune, that's for sure. So Molly has she's an AP literature, whatever it's called. AP Lang, she calls it, English class. She's an English
for
class.
For our non-American listeners, you might want to explain what AP means.
Oh, it's advanced placement. It's a higher level of the class than the standard academic track.
Her
final project was to create a website with, she had to have a thesis paper in it, like an essay, and she had to have all these other multimedia things. And one of the things that she added was a podcast episode. So,
what were we just talking about a few minutes ago? We need someone with those kinds of skills working for us.
That's true.
You've got a daughter. We have free labor at our disposal.
Yeah. I'm not sure I've got the sales skills to pull that spin off. But but yeah, so she did a podcast episode. Her thesis had to do with animal experimentation. And she did a podcast episode with a good friend of mine who happens to be a toxicologist for the National Institutes of Health here in the U.S. And so, yeah, she talked to him about animal experimentation and the ethical dilemmas therein. And it was the episode went on like 16, 17 minutes. And she announced afterward to me that it couldn't be longer than 5 minutes. I was like, how am I supposed to?
Good luck, editor. Fix that.
So I said, you know what? You need Simon because he's the expert at taking out tons of unnecessary asides from me.
From both of us, McKelly. I have to say, so I think we've mentioned before that we have in our script here a section called witty banter.
We do.
And now I understand what's written there because it just says podcast ! And I kind of dreamed that there was some kind of musical being written about us or something.
Yes, that's what it is. No, unfortunately.
On the subject of fortune, I had the misfortune of hearing us singing the other day.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
You must have listened to an older episode?
Yeah, the Discord server, people were talking about their favorite bits, and Kebby Lebby mentioned us saying, "We're sorry, Beethoven." And I had no recollection of us saying that. So I went back and listened to the episode that she was talking about. And it was when you sang
Ode to
Joy. And I said, "We're sorry, Beethoven."
Oh, I forgot about that. I clearly blocked it out.
You don't go back and listen to it. We are awful. I mean, you were actually okay. I was horrible. Yeah, sure. Horrible.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, that new channel on the Discord server has been fun. It was requested. Yeah. Kebby Lebby actually requested it to bring up funny quotes and funny moments from episodes, and people have been having a lot of fun with that.
Yeah, she also drew our attention to one that both of us had forgotten, which was Shay becoming a scallion.
Yes, my response to that was, nothing like embarrassing yourself in front of all the world to listen.
God, that was, yeah, I'd forgotten that.
That was a good one.
Oh, so my news, I have absolutely nothing, but I played soccer at the weekend.
Uh-huh.
And I've graduated from should I lie or should I tell the truth? Okay, I'll tell the truth. I've graduated from an over 40s team to an over 50s team.
How could you have done that?
I know. They let me in 20 years early. It's weird. And it's pre-season, and so we were arranging a friendly. My over 50s team was arranging a friendly, and we arranged it with my over 40s team.
Oh,
so I was playing against all my old friends who
right.
I used to play with. And giving up 10 years per person to them, we got trounced fairly, you know, brutally. It was like 7-2 or something.
Mm.
But I scored an absolute worldie.
Yes, sir.
I put one in the top corner. And the goalkeeper, who's a very good goalkeeper, he IM'd me today because he works with us. And he said, Simon, that's one of the best goals I've ever conceded.
Wow. Congratulations.
And he's conceded a lot. I mean, I've been on his team. He's got statistical numbers to
Well, good job,
yeah.
You.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing that was funny about it was I got the ball and I was in a really good position to cross and I slightly miscontrolled it. And then I had to sort of move and I didn't get it right again. And the whole time I was dribbling with this ball, I was cursing my bad play. I was like, idiot, wasted the chance, stupid. And then I fired it into the top corner.
Fired a rocket. You took those frustrations out on the ball.
Exactly.
Nice. Well, speaking of getting older, I did something else new this week.
I thought you meant it's time to start the podcast.
It probably is. Yes, that too. You know what I did? Stacey and I both, actually. And it was her fault because she started it.
Can I check that with Stacey, please?
Let me go get her. She bought a pack, like a 4-pack of readers. You know, reader glasses?
Oh, glasses. Yes.
Okay. Yes. And I was like, oh, look at you with your old person eyes. I don't need, and I put them on and it was like, oh, the screen on my tab like doubled in size. It was like those new Samsung Folds, you know? I was like, what? What are these?
Well, actually, now you've reminded me of something that happened in our house. We have two dogs, as you know. We have a Penny and we have Twiggy.
Mm-hmm.
And Twiggy's a bit high strung and she's on some medication. And we give her this medication morning and night. And I don't really know what it is. It's called phenobarbital. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it does to her. I just give it to the dog. The other morning, what I do is I wrap it in a little bit of cheese and I drop it in her food bowl in the morning and I feed both the dogs. I walked through the kitchen and the two food bowls were in the wrong position.
Uh-oh.
Penny's was where Twiggy's goes and Twiggy's was where Penny's goes. And so I was like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
When did I mix it up? Because if I mixed it up during the making of the breakfast, then it'll be fine.
Right.
But if I mixed it up after I made the breakfast and then put them on the floor, then I've just given phenobarbital to the dog who doesn't need it.
Right.
Penny lay around the house like a stoner all day.
She's you like, got it wrong.
Whoa. Welcome to your world, Twiggy.
Oh, no.
And Twiggy was like, I got the DTs, man.
Uh-oh.
That was unfortunate.
Well, I assume one time won't hurt.
Yes. I mean, Penny. She was fine by the next day.
She just asked for some snacks.
Yeah.
Wanted some munchies.
All right, let's get down to business. How did we leave Jaime Lannister? Last we saw of Jaime, he, Brienne, and Cleos Frey were attacked by outlaws outside of Maidenpool. Cleos was killed, ploughing a lonely furrow.
Yes, right.
Jaime attacked Brienne with Cleos's sword, and the two fought viciously for a long time. The noise of their fighting alerted the brave companions to their presence, and the pair were taken as captives. Jaime tried to bribe Urswick to take him to King's Landing, and later tried to bribe Vargo Hoat to do the same. Hoat agreed he would have half the gold in Castle Rock, but first he had to send Tywin a message. With that, Jaime's arm was stretched out and an arrack was swung down. McKelly, why don't we find out where that landed?
Okay. Well, Jaime's missing hand burns. That's how I started the summary, so...
I guess that answers that question.
His hand is burned. Ever since they seared the flesh on his bloody stump at the end of his right arm, which gives us a little more context as to where that arrack landed. The pain is like nothing he's ever experienced before, often bringing him to tears. He's sick with fever from the infection setting in on his wound, causing him to fall from his saddle.
To remedy this issue, the Brave Companions tie him into a saddle alongside Brienne. They sit facing each other with Jaime's severed hand tied to a rope around Jaime's neck, dangling between them. Jaime once manages to get hold of a sword and attacks Shagwell the Fool. However, in Jaime's weakened state, the Fool merely dances around him until Jaime trips and falls.
At that point, Jaime decides he'll just go ahead and die. It's Brienne calling him a craven for giving up that snaps him out of it. She's right. He has to live, for Cersei and Tyrion's sake. Well, them and the vengeance he would seek on these men. Unfortunately, it was his right hand they took, as his left was no good for holding anything but a shield, so vengeance will have to wait.
When Jaime's reminded that they're headed for Harrenhal, he can't help but laugh at the irony, a move he received a beating for. It was at Harrenhal that he received his white cloak at the age of 15. Later that night, three Brave Companions approach Brienne. Jaime knows what's coming and begs her to take the rape quietly, to go inside herself and think of Tarth or Renly. They'd go easier on her, but Brienne isn't having it.
Jaime knows she'll get herself killed, so when Rorg threatens Brienne to stay quiet, Jaime shouts, "Sapphires!" loudly for the camp to hear. Jaime takes a beating for it, but his shouting alerts Hoat, who announces Brienne is off limits. She's worth a bag of sapphires.
The prisoners are paraded on foot through the gates of Harrenhal and led to the current lord of the castle, Roose Bolton, and a fury of Frey knights. Brienne is heartened by Bolton being in charge. She figures he'll do as Brienne asks, since they both support King Robb.
Jaime expresses his condolences to the Freys present about the death of theirs and his kin, Sir Cleos. The men take the news in stride. That's when Brienne interjects and announces who she is and the mission she's on from Lady Catelyn herself. She's surprised to receive spit on the ground in response. Seems the Freys feel betrayed by King Robb, and what does it matter to them if his sisters are killed?
Some suggest they kill Jaime themselves. Others want to ransom him to Riverrun or Tywin. Hoat explains his plan. He'll send pieces of Jaime to Tywin until he pays up. Then he'll sell Jaime to Rickard Karstark and receive Karstark's daughter along with the Lannister money. Roos sets the record straight on Lord Rickard and explains that the Lannisters and Tyrells are now allies.
Roos expresses his displeasure to the Brave Companions, has Brienne and Jaime sent to private chambers, and Jaime tended to. Jaime is taken to Qyburn for medical attention. Qyburn wants to remove Jaime's arm, but Jaime refuses. Instead, Qyburn cleans the wound and stitches it up. Jaime learns of the details of the Battle of the Blackwater. As Qyburn finishes attending to Jaime, Jaime asks him to check on Brienne.
Yep.
It's been a while.
You said 10 chapters? Since
10 chapters. Yeah, 21. Chapter 21 was Jaime 3. So, now, I mentioned at the end of last week's episode that Jaime got to keep his hand, just not how he would have wanted to keep it.
It's like a soap on a rope around his neck.
Yeah. Yes, kind of. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, what terrible torment to have your hand hung around your neck like that. You know, like the thing you miss so dearly, but it's rotting and decaying and smelling and you just want to throw it away. But then, shall I say, on the other hand? It is also your right hand, a major part of your whole life. So that would be...
If Qyburn was any kind of maester, he'd sew that thing back on.
Right. I still have the hand.
couldn't find a bag of frozen peas, but...
Yeah, it's...
Do you have some medical stats on phantom limb syndrome?
I just looked up what it was. So I don't know if how... Well, we conveyed it in the summary because we had other stuff to talk about in the summary, but he keeps feeling his hand, his actual hand is hurt.
We were distracted by the fact that it was the news of the fact he'd lost his hand.
Yes.
But yes, he was suffering from pain in the hand that was no longer there.
Right. So I looked up phantom limb syndrome, and according to the National Institutes of Health here in the U.S., it's a condition where patients experience sensations, whether painful or otherwise, in a limb that does not exist. And it's been reported to occur in 80 to 100% of amputees.
I remember quite a long time ago seeing a therapy for that, where the patient was sitting with a mirror such that they could put their existing hand or foot, whatever it was, by the mirror. And that would then give them the illusion of their other hand.
Oh.
And seeing their other hand gave them relief from it.
Oh, wow.
Like, they wriggled the fingers of their left hand, and they could see the fingers wriggling on their right hand, and it gave them relief from the pain they were suffering.
Huh. Wow. That's a fascinating approach.
It stuck with me. I remember seeing the guy doing it, and he just, as soon as he put his hand in the box, he started to feel the relief. He said it had been itchy and, like, burning, and now wasn't, because, yeah.
Oh, that would be so tough.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's nothing you can't itch the hand that's not there, or the foot, or whichever, you know.
Well, if it happens to you, McKelly, get a mirror.
Okay, I will keep that in mind. I will keep that in mind.
I seek medical advice. I mean, I just watched a TV show like 30 years ago. I have no idea. It might have been a comedy show. I don't remember.
And once again, we should mention every time you bring up medical advice, you are not that kind of doctor.
That kind of doctor.
If you need advice on chemistry...
I'm not that kind of doctor.
Still might want to consult... different kind of doctor.
So Jamie's very sick, and obviously he's extremely depressed, and he just wants to lay down and die. You know what I mean? I mean, when you get the kind of level of infection he's gotten from this wound, you are going to be pretty delirious. But it's not, I don't think even the delirium is cutting through the awfulness of the situation to him. He who's been defined by his sword fighting has lost his sword hand, you know.
Yes, right. Yeah, there's so many levels there. Yeah, and so, you know, he grabs a sword and he tries to attack Shagwell, who is the fool, Shagwell just dances around him until Jamie trips and falls, and then I think it's Varga Hoat says, "You do that again and I will take your other hand or maybe a foot or something like that." And Jamie just lays there and thinks, "Okay, I'm just gonna die now here." And, you know, even just the act of taking the sword was a bit of a suicide mission. He thinks to himself, "I don't care if they kill me. I just want to die with a sword in my hand."
Yeah. And I mean, he's not completely lost as a fighter. I mean, he could learn to fight with his other hand, but with the infection that he's suffering, I mean, like, he can't even stand up trying to fight an unarmed fool.
Right.
Which is, that's not a good sign. I have to admit, Shagwell needs to be careful if he recovers from this infection, because...
Yes, he does.
He might be part of Jamie's prayers going forward.
Right. Yeah, Jamie might not be able to win a tournament melee with his left hand, but he might be able to just, mm-hmm. just catch up to Shagwell once he's recovered.
Mm-hmm. We'll be right back.
Hello, friends. Are you ready to make some unforgettable memories? Well, if so, consider the Marriott Bonvoy program. Discover the perfect destination for your summer getaway and unlock exclusive deals on luxurious accommodations. With our affiliate partnership, you'll enjoy unbeatable savings and a seamless booking experience. Don't let summer slip away. Visit Marriott Bonvoy today and make this vacation season one for the books. Use our Ghosts of Harrenhal affiliate page to check it all out and buy Bonvoy points or give some as a gift. The link to our page is in the show notes.
But yeah, so the only thing that brings him back from the sort of the precipice is being called a craven. That's struck home. And of course, I mean, it's easy for me to say, but there is a cowardice to giving up just because you've lost a hand.
Right. I mean, that's kind of Brienne's point. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've had boo-boos that have made me want to give up. So let's be clear. I am not saying I would be any less craven, but that gets through to him, and that sort of like gives him a new lease on life and at least gets him to Harrenhal. And part of it is thinking about Cersei. You know, he wants to see Cersei again.
Right. And he thinks he can't die before Cersei dies. They have to die together as they came into the world together. Right. And one thing that comes up in this chapter, in this section here, is that Brienne is made to clean up Jaime's messes. When he vomits, she has to clean the vomit out of his beard, and she has to clean him up when he soils his pants, you know, while sharing
a saddle with him. She'd want to help clear that up.
Yeah, well, there is that. So, you know, she's not escaping the torture that these brave companions are putting Jaime through. She's getting her fair share as well.
Yeah.
So it's not just Cersei that Jaime thinks about. He also thinks about Tyrion. He doesn't want to leave his little brother either. And Jaime thinks about Tyrion and says that Tyrion loves him for a lie. And that is, so what we've learned so far about the whole situation with Tysha, we had originally learned that, you know, Jaime and Tyrion found this crofter's daughter, and she was being accosted by some men, and Jaime ran the men off, and Tyrion took care of Tysha, and then they ended up falling in love and getting married. Well, when Tywin found out, Jaime says that Tywin forced Jaime to admit to Tyrion that he was lying about Tysha, and that she was not a crofter's daughter, that she was a prostitute, and that he paid her to make Tyrion a man. We learned that when Bronn and Tyrion were coming through the Mountains of the Moon. Yep. So, you know, as best as we know right now, that's the lie that he is referring to, that Tyrion loves him for.
Because you're saying that Tyrion loves him for paying a prostitute to pretend to not be a prostitute and fall in love with Tyrion.
As we understand it, yes.
But you're hinting at the fact that this might be a double lie.
It could be.
That she was, in fact, what she said she was. That Tywin made him tell a lie to say that she was, in fact, a prostitute. And that Tyrion, that's the lie that Tyrion loves him for, is, it's, the whole thing is a lie.
Yeah, I mean, that's, we don't know anything other than that Jaime was forced by Tywin to tell Tyrion that it was a lie, and that Tysha was, like, not a crofter's daughter, but in fact a prostitute.
Because, okay, so following the logic of that, if it is a complete lie, she really was a crofter's daughter, then Jaime really didn't do anything other than chase the guys, the attackers off. He didn't do anything to help Tyrion at all.
Right.
In fact, he has lied to Tyrion and broken Tyrion's heart with that lie.
Well, sure. Of course, Tyrion, if that were to be the case, if what the scenario you just painted is the actual scenario, Tyrion doesn't know that. So,
right, which is why he might be saying he loves me. He loves me, but he loves me for a reason that he does not understand.
Right. Yes, that is possible. Yes.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. But actually, the one thing about that is that story doesn't ring as true to me as the current story, because it just, a crofter's daughter just happens to get attacked in front of the Lannister boys, and Jaime just happens to run off and chase the men away, leaving Tyrion with a stranded girl.
And she happens to fall in love with Tyrion, and they...
I mean, the story we have that she was a paid prostitute is correct, clearly.
Yeah, that's the story we have. That's the story we have to go on anyway. So, yeah, it's very well. It could be as true as Tyrion knows it.
Yeah. Interesting. We shall keep an eye on that one.
We shall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then, so when Jamie's trying to save Brienne from the rape, he advises her to send her mind away and just let it happen to her body while her mind is somewhere else. And he actually compares it to his own experience of watching Ned Stark's father and brother die in King's Landing. Because you've got to remember, he was a very young guy at the time.
Right. A teenager.
And he's watching this. Remind me how they died. The father was...
Rickard was burned to death in his armor. And Brandon was strangled to death trying to reach sword to save his father.
And so, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to compare it to what Brienne is facing, but you can see how if you were Jaime in that instance, you might very well use that technique to try and armor yourself against what you're witnessing.
Right. Yeah, and we did know about that. When he was telling Brienne about this several chapters ago, he mentioned that he thought about Cersei while the Starks were dying. So,
I just thought that was like an idea association, to be honest. I saw men being roasted alive, and weirdly, my sister came to mind.
But yeah, so as you know, Jamie saves Brienne from a gang rape, basically, is what it was about to amount to here, and he didn't need to. Even Brienne was shocked and confused about him saving her. And, it's the second time that he's come up with using the Sapphire Island idea to prevent her from being raped. You know, the first time was when he came up with it and he told Urswick, I think it was.
But the thing about that, you say that, but doesn't it seem strange then that she's surprised? I mean, he's already saved her once in this way, and he's using the same trick again to save her. It's the least surprising thing ever. Oh, I saved you once. I'm not going to bother this time.
Well, I think it's mostly it might just be just general surprise because it's just so different from the self-centered, arrogant, egotistical person we met in Jamie 1. You know, that person wouldn't have probably trifled with even bothering to save her.
Right, but I mean, you say that, but you can be pretty egotistical, narcissistic even. But if someone is cleaning you up when you soil yourself,
yes,
you have formed a bond with that person and you actually care about them just a little bit.
Without
a huge change in your personality, you know.
Yes. And that's one thing I was almost going to say exactly what you just said is one thing that this torture that the Brave Companions are putting on Jaime and Brienne, one thing it's doing is creating a bond between the two. You know, them constantly being tied together and having to work together to survive. And as you say, you know, she is cleaning him up from his vomit and soiling his clothes. And even to the level of, you know, the whole enemy of my enemy is my friend thing here. You know, they have a common enemy, which gives them another bond here.
Yep.
So that is absolutely... seems reasonable to be a factor. It's just she's probably surprised still trying to wrap her head around the little bit of compassion that he has been showing. And you know, it's always been hard to kind of reconcile the man who has shown such love and compassion to his little brother who's, you know, had a lot of torment in his life as well, Tyrion, being the same man who pushed Bran out of the window so thoughtlessly. And so maybe we're seeing that he needs to make some sort of connection with someone to be able to show a level of compassion.
Yes, that's an interesting thought, that he is a nice guy, but he's closed off to people who aren't in his inner circle kind of thing.
Right, right.
And rapidly, Brienne is moving into his inner circle because, you know, they are sitting face to face on a horse for hundreds of miles.
Yes, with their bad breath and rotting hand between them.
That he comments on her bad breath whilst his rotting hand and his soiled pants are redolent.
I almost put it in pedantry. Seriously, in my tab, I have a color for highlighting things for pedantry. And I have that highlighted. And I thought, if that rotting hand is between the two of them, how is he smelling her breath?
Your breath is terrible. It smells like rotting hand.
Oh, that's so funny you brought that up, because I seriously, no joke, had that in my tab as pedantry. they're going back to Harrenhal, and Jamie thinks about, the tourney at Harrenhal and, how it all began for him there. That's where he was given the white cloak. And he tells Brienne that Wendt wanted to show us his big castle and his fine sons, and it's a little bit of humor in that line, because in Mira's story that she told Bran of the tournament at Harrenhal,
yes,
one of the small details that kind of flies by is that at the end of the first day, all of the Wendt sons were eliminated from the jousting.
Right.
So if he wanted to show off those fine sons, it didn't last very long. But one thing I wanted to bring up about this tourney is that...
This tourney that we've never heard of before at Harrenhal.
I know, right? First time. So Aerys didn't let Jaime joust at the tourney after giving him his white cloak. He sent him to King's Landing to guard Queen Rhaella and Prince Viserys. And, Jamie tells Brienne, no one could have defeated me. I was riding so high, on such a high, I was unbeatable. And so I wondered if maybe the decision to send Jamie back to King's Landing changed the course of history and led to the loss of his King Aerys' life, his reign, and the life of most of his family.
Because he would have beaten Rhaegar, and
yes.
It was Rhaegar giving the flowers to Lyanna that precipitated all this.
That sent us down this path. Now, it could be, very easily could be, the bravado and confidence of a 15-year-old. But if true, if he really was, he channeled Jorah Mormont. And, this was going to be his lightning in a bottle moment as a 15-year-old. It might have changed the course of Westerosi history.
Yep.
We'll be right back.
This episode is sponsored by Audible. To get a free audiobook or two if you're an Amazon Prime member, go to our exclusive URL, audibletrial.com/ghostsharrenhal. You can find the link in our show notes.
So Harrenhal flies the direwolf sigil over the gate, but when they arrive, Ennis Frey spits at the mention of Robb Stark. So we're getting sort of the mixed signals. What's interesting about that is there's no great surprise that the Freys are mad at Robb, because he broke his word to them.
And right.
That's not going to sit well. But what's kind of interesting is that Roose Bolton tolerates it.
Uh-huh.
Because,
yeah. So we know, we were there in River Run when the Freys found out about the marriage of Robb and Jane Westerling. We saw them storm out, stomping on the direwolf sigil on their way out.
Uh-huh.
But here in Harrenhal, they're here still supporting Roose, who is still a bannerman to Robb Stark. So it's very, the allegiance thing is getting very confusing here. It sure seemed like they were leaving at the, I think it was Arya 10, the last Arya chapter of A Clash of Kings, when Elmar Frey told her of the dishonor that their house had faced. It sure seemed like they were going to storm out, but here they are.
So Ennis doubles down on his anti-Starkness by saying, why should he care if Stark daughters are killed? Another phrase suggests that they kill Jamie in response to Ned's death. But that's kind of, again, more contradiction just within the phrase. I guess the phrase are absolving Ned of the crimes of his son.
Yes, I guess so. That's true. And you know, one thing, I went back to make sure I was right. Roos was sent 3 ravens by Edmure Tully with the very specific instructions to return Jaime, if found, return to sender. That was Cat 1 of A Storm of Swords. He told her this. So based on that, he should be preparing Jaime for return to Riverrun, but he makes no mention of what his plans are for Jaime at this point.
Yeah, it's a very complicated situation now, because obviously the Freys don't want to do what Rob wants. And right. You could argue, oh, I'm just doing what Catelyn wanted.
Yeah.
Or you could line your own pockets by ransoming Jaime to Tywin.
Yeah, a lot of options, and he does not, and at least to our POV character, he does not tip his hand in what he's thinking or planning right now.
Yeah, yeah.
So we meet 3 Freys. There's 5 in attendance. Jamie mentions 3 of them by name: Aenys, Danwell, and Hosteen Frey. Aenys is the oldest. He's the third born Frey child. And he led 1,500 Frey soldiers who joined Roose's force for the battle on the Green Fork. And, you know, one thing that I noticed was how very little reaction they had to the murder of their nephew, Cleos.
I'm going to say, you know how, like, in an anthill, if one ant dies, the other ants don't really stop to worry about it?
So the twins are an anthill. There's so many Freys.
I mean, how are you gonna get sad when you're like, which one was Cleos again? You know, I mean, like, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I think I remember Cleos. Yeah. I was thinking maybe it was because they probably also know that his brother Teon was murdered by Rickard Karstark, since Roose knows about Rickard Karstark being beheaded.
Right.
But
wouldn't that make them more sad about Cleos?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. They certainly wouldn't have known that ahead of time.
Yeah.
So there's one line, it's actually a couple lines here, but while they're discussing Jaime's fate, Shagwell sings a song about a lion who dances with a bear, and Hote responds to him by saying, "The Kingslayer's not for the bear, he's mine," which almost seems like they're referencing an actual bear.
Right, or a big hairy dude who kills people.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, we'll have to keep an eye on that, but it seemed like they were discussing a physical thing.
Right.
So I thought it was noteworthy.
Yeah. Hope voices his crazy plan of sending pieces of Jaime to Tywin until he pays up, and then selling what's left of Jaime to the Karstarks in order to get the hand of Rickard's daughter. Roose Bolton basically just ignores this as nonsensical,
yes,
which it pretty much is. I wonder if this will put tension in the relationship between Roose and Vargo Hope, because cutting Jamie's hand off has served no great purpose other than to alienate you from everyone. There's nobody who wanted that.
Right.
Apart from Vargo Hote, it seemed.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the Starks aren't going to be thrilled with that. The Lannisters certainly aren't going to be thrilled with that. So, yeah, this is Roose's person. You know, he reports to Roose. So theoretically, Roose might have to answer for this.
Yeah, Roose seems oddly forgiving of Vargo Hote in a way that I don't. Again, we don't know Roose very well. We've hardly He's hardly had any FaceTime in the book. But you don't think of him as a very forgiving chap. You think of him as pretty rigid. He's the Stannis Baratheon of the North, you know.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, he does. And he keeps putting himself in with Hote and what he's done by saying things like, he says to Brienne, "Forgive us, my lady." Not forgive them. He's taking ownership of the Bloody Mummers and what they've done.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, well, like I just said a minute ago, Fargo Hope reports to Roose. So, you know, if Roose is taking credit for, or the blame, I guess, for what his people have done, then I guess that's some level honorable thing to do. So when Jaime hears about the Lannister-Tyrell alliance, he thinks to himself, I tried to warn Urswick and Hote. You know what? I think we mentioned this, possibly mentioned this earlier. He tried to convince Urswick to take him to King's Landing to get rewarded with gold and a knighthood and cut out Hote. Urswick refused, saying Tywin's arms aren't long enough to reach into Harrenhal. And then he tried to sway Fargo Hote with gold, but Hote said he'd have half the gold in Casterly Rock. But first, he had to send Tywin a message. And it's not quite obvious what the connection is between I tried to warn Urswick and Hote and hearing about the Lannister-Tyrell alliance. But I think it's likely the fact that the Tyrell's alliance strengthens the Lannister position in the realm and only increases...
And lengthens that reach.
Yes, yes.
Yeah,
the two richest houses in Westeros. And, you know, the Tyrells have a huge force, which is mostly undamaged by wars. You know, remember, many in the Battle of the Blackwater came to the Tyrell side quickly, especially when they saw Renly's ghost.
Right, right. So Hope is convinced he's going to sell what's left of Jaime to the Karstarks for the Karstark daughter. But he, too, heard that Rickard Karstark was dead, so he must... Well, I don't know. He seems like a loose cannon, but it seems to me you'd be like, is that promise going to stand up when the head of the family no longer can?
And I'd have to think that Rickard Karstark, even with his head intact, even if he is so mad at Jaime Lannister that he wants to do unspeakable things to him, is never going to turn his maiden daughter over to Vargo Hote and the Bloody Mummers.
Yes, the lisping SOC.
Yes, I just have to, you know, we mostly only got to really meet Rickard when he was in extreme depression and extreme anger over the loss of his son. So we didn't really get to know him very well, but I gotta think he doesn't want Jaime back that bad.
Right.
True. Or he might take Jaime back, give Vargo Hote something in return, which is not his main daughter.
Not his daughter. Yes, I agree.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. I believe if Vargo Hote is getting to anywhere near Karstark's daughter, Karstark will actually come back from the dead.
Yes, possibly. Yes. But, you know, it's an odd time. Did you think it an odd time for Jaime to kind of mock Roose Bolton about his Tywin defeating him?
Well, I mean, it's the first time you got a chance to talk to him, so you've had this line waiting for like a year now. But yeah, I mean, it does seem that since Roose Bolton is now the lord of the castle that Tywin recently owned, but now no longer does, to mock him for failing to beat Tywin seems, yes, ill-timed.
While you are a captive.
One-handed captive.
Yes, it just seemed like a really weird time to do that. What he's referring to, in case you might not remember, is so Jaime tells Roose, last time my father saw you, you were, you know, he ran your army off. When did you stop running? And he's referring to the battle on the Green Fork when Roose brought Robb's infantry to keep Tywin distracted while Robb's mounted force made for River Run. And we kept saying, why did he engage in a fight in the first place? That wasn't part of the plan.
Right. I mean, the thing is, the battle did go Tywin's way, but it was supposed to. And Roose was supposed to run. I mean, it's like it went exactly to the Starks' blueprint. So mocking them for their success seems a bit weird.
Yeah. That's true. That's true.
So, Roose sends Jaime to Qyburn. Qyburn is a maester, but he doesn't wear a chain. And he says that the Citadel took my chain.
Yeah, that was kind of just slid in there, wasn't it? I mean, he sure, it kind of glossed over that admission. I guess I will say this. We will find out about what he did to earn that punishment.
In the TV show, I'll get to this, but he expands on that sentence by saying they didn't like some of the things that I was doing.
You know? Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. And yeah, another thing Qyburn says here is that he's used to tending to missing limbs with, you know, when you ride with the Bloody Mummers, you get pretty experienced at tending to missing limbs. And of course, Vargo Hoat, one of his nicknames is the Crippler for his proclivity for cutting off hands and feet. And the Bloody Mummers are also known as the Footmen or the Toes of the Goat because their sigil is a goat for that same reputation of limb removal.
So obviously the stump is terribly infected and Qyburn says that the way to save Jamie's life for sure is to cut the rest of his arm off, but Jamie's having none of it. But he refuses milk of the poppy. He decides to guts it out because now instead of a new cut, what Qyburn plans to do is to pick off the infected meat and then put sort of boiling wine on the cleaned stump.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Ugh. Death sounds preferable at this point.
Yep, that's why Jamie was unsuccessful at guarding his... He planned to stay awake and guard his arm to make sure Qyburn didn't take any more of it. He was unsuccessful. He passed out from the pain.
Yeah.
But then when he wakes in the aftermath, you know, that Qyburn is kind of putting on the finishing touches of sewing up Jamie's arm. Jamie asks Qyburn about the battle for the Battle of the Blackwater. And Qyburn says, you know, about the whole wildfire plot that we've explored very thoroughly. And this is the first Jamie is hearing of it. And Jamie, you know, thinks to himself that he's dreamed the dream of King's Landing burning from wildfire before. And, you know, he thinks it's a little bit humorous, but he doesn't have anyone to share the humor of it with. And, of course, he's likely referring to the events during the sack of King's Landing regarding Rosart and Aerys' warm welcome they were planning for the Lannister army.
Right, right.
And I guess what he finds humorous is that he killed Rosart, so the warm welcome never happened, yet here his brother gave a warm welcome to Stannis's force, and it saved his family and their grasp on the Iron Throne, is kind of the ironic humor there.
Yeah, I can see that. So explain the final line of the chapter to me. Qyburn describes Lord Bolton as being fond of leeches, and Jaime says he would be.
Yeah, it's... Okay, here's why I wrote that down. Because Martin tends to use the last sentences of a chapter to punctuate something. Like, if you think back to the last chapter, the John chapter, the last sentence is Ygritte saying, we couldn't find the Horn of Winter to tear this wall down.
Yes.
And the chapter before that, the Arya chapter, the very last sentence is, she sees the face of the prisoner getting ready to be put in the crow cage and thinks, my prayer's answered. So this just seems so innocuous that I wondered, why would he end the chapter like that? It just is out of character to end the chapter as such.
Let's speculate then.
I will say, I took this to the sustainers, the Buy Me a Coffee sustainers, to get some ideas.
Okay, good. He has both the phrase and the bloody the brave companions working for him. Are they the leeches that he's fond of?
Oh.
They are, you know, staying there at his discretion, leeching off him. He seems weirdly fond of both of them and forgiving of their wrongness.
Right.
Just throwing that out.
Yeah, I like that. The consensus answer from the sustainers.
I never get the right answer.
That's a good answer. I like that answer. The consensus answer from the sustainers is that just before that, Jamie was telling Brienne about how the Boltons flay their enemies. And they were thinking that he is thinking kind of like blood for blood, you know, leeches suck blood, Boltons flay their enemies.
Okay.
That was kind of the thought there. I wondered if maybe it was in reference to Bolton's character. Is he the leech? Will he glom on to whatever?
Yeah.
And but so far, he has not shown anything but pretty steady loyalty to Rob.
Right. But now I'm worried because of the presence of the Freys and because of his tolerance of the Bloody Mummers. I am worried about Roose Bolton's... and also now because he has in his possession the most valuable object in the realm, Jaime Lannister.
Right.
And that could turn your head.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's legitimate concern.
And actually, let's throw in one last thing. His evil offspring. His evil offspring is ransacking the North.
Yes. And we have discussed what Roose may or may not know and what Roose may or may not have had any kind of effect on up there with Ramsay Snow.
Well, anyway, we'll keep an eye on the leeches. What about some background?
Well, like last week, not a chapter ripe with background opportunities. So we're going to continue our history lesson on Harrenhal. Last we talked about the historical beginnings of this mighty castle we call home. We discussed how Aegon the Conqueror had granted Sir Quentin Coherys, his master at arms on Dragonstone, as Lord of Harrenhal. And how after Quentin died, his grandson, Gargan, assumed lordship over the castle. But he was a womanizer and overextended his right of first knight with newly married women within his jurisdiction, to the point where a father of one of such women secretly led an outlaw named Harren the Red into the castle, and the outlaw killed Gargan after cutting off his manhood.
Can I say that overextending the right of first knight is once?
Oh, yeah, well, yes, you can certainly say that. So that's where we pick up the story. Harren the Red claimed to be the grandson of Harren the Black, the founder of Harrenhal, and upon the removal of Gargan Coherys, Red Harren proclaimed himself Lord of Harrenhal and the King of the Rivers. Now, King Aenys Targaryen, who had recently been crowned after the death of his father Aegon the Conqueror, happened to be in Riverrun at the time of Harren's proclamation, and he commanded Lord Tully to march on the castle and subdue this uprising. However, when Red Harren got wind of the army advancing on Harrenhal, he had all the loyal castle servants killed, and he and his men fled into the woods. So King Aenys sent his Hand of the King, Alan Stokeworth, with a force to track down Red Harren and his men. They found the outlaws in a village on the west side of the God's Eye, and Alan Stokeworth was killed by Red Harren in the fighting. However, Stokeworth's squire, Benar Brun, killed Red Harren, earning him a knighthood, and lordship of the castle was then granted to Lucas Haraway.
Thank you. So, comparison with the television show, there's not much of the journey, thankfully. They are, after the hand removal scene, they're brought to Harrenhal directly and sort of forced to their knees. Roose Bolton is sort of palliative towards Jaime. He's annoyed with his Bannerman Locke, who is the person who takes over from Vargo Hoat in the TV show as the guy who does this. He's annoyed about it. He takes the hand from Jamie's neck and throws it aside, or actually thrusts it at Locke. Locke says, "I'll send it to Tywin," and Bolton says, "You'll do nothing of the sort."
Okay.
And then the scene with Qyburn, as I mentioned, is captured, and Qyburn's interesting, quite sinister, but obviously quite skilled as well. And Jaime's very tough.
He doesn't pass out then, I guess.
No, well, he screams. He screams loud and hard, but he didn't actually pass out. Yeah. Quite reasonably well captured.
Okay.
Pedantry, just the character decision to complain about her breath.
I agree.
That's all. So news and notes. What you got for us?
Well, one thing I wanted to mention is that in preparation for some new ventures forthcoming, George Martin has combined his two existing businesses, the Jean Cocteau Cinema and Beastly Books, under the business name High Garden Entertainment. So this announcement was on his Not a Blog blog. And it goes on to mention a new Patreon offering from High Garden Entertainment, ranging from the $5 tier to the $15 tier. And some of the perks are cool, and I may be a bit biased, but I like our Buy Me a Coffee perks better. But, yeah, you know, if you're...
for less than that, you get access to the originators.
That's right.
It's because... that's one of the perks that's coming up. Our Buy Me a Coffee sustainers will get a live video chat, which is scheduled for, check with me if I'm wrong here, McKelly, Thursday, February the 2nd at 7 p.m. Eastern Time in the United States.
You are correct.
Wow, I got it.
You did.
We're also having a lot of fun with our Wildfire Side chats. Sustainers have been sending us fun topics to discuss. We've talked about what we'd make if we're entertaining a dozen guests, how we went from friends to podcast co-hosts, our favorite places on earth and why, and whether we would choose chopsticks for hands or office chair wheels for feet. And that was a very interesting one.
It was.
And there's more in the pipeline, right? There are questions we were supposed to record tonight, but I wanted more time because I want to come up with good answers. So.
Yes. Yes, we're having a lot of fun with that. I really appreciate the sustainers sending us stuff and playing along. It's a good time. Yeah, you know, one thing I was worried about when we came up with the idea for this perk is whether anyone would care what we thought about certain topics. So it's been a lot of fun to see what they want to know about our thoughts on things. Oh, and there is a merch sale going on our Threadless shop. As of right now, there's a $14 t-shirts, and a lot of pretty much everything else is on discount as well. So if you're interested, check it out at ghostofharrenhal.threadless.com.
Yep, my whole family got the Threadless t-shirts for Christmas, and they look rather dapper. You look good. Yeah. You're wearing yours at home.
I am wearing one right now.
Okay, we got a review. Bowie Jones on Apple Podcast, entitled "The Best Hands Down."
That's right.
Which is appropriate for the Jamie chapter.
I
listened on another platform, so I follow the show here just to leave a review. That's very kind of you. Thank you. Appreciate that. That's how highly I think of it. I stay caught up on the show weekly because I can't wait for the next episode to drop. The guys are great, entertaining, intelligent, and not to mention fun to listen to. The effort they put in to make the show entertaining and informative is refreshing. Well, thank you.
Yes, thank you so much.
Very kind.
It is. And the fact that Bowie Jones listens on a different platform but took the time to go out on Apple Podcasts and leave us a rate and a review. Fantastic.
All right, let's conclude this one, McKelly.
Okay.
So, where's Jamie headed next? Back to River Run? Dragged off to the north? Stuck in Harrenhal? King's Landing?
Essos?
Essos.
Yeah, well, I mean, if he's not headed back to River Run, what do they do with him? I mean, he was specifically... Now, here's the thing. It was Edmure Tully who sent the Ravens to Harrenhal that said, hey, if you find Jaime Lannister, you send him back. He is not Bannerman to Edmure Tully.
Interesting.
So could that be a loophole if he wanted to do something else with the Kingslayer?
Yeah. It's confusing times in Harrenhal. It's not hard to see who's the leader in Harrenhal. That's Roose Bolton.
Oh,
he's in charge. But who is Roose Bolton working for?
Yeah.
We've never seen any treachery from him at all, but there's enough circumstantial evidence to get you a little bit worried about where things are headed for Jaime.
Yeah.
The one thing is, times are so confusing, you can do either of the two things and claim loyalty. I sent him back to Riverrun because Robb Stark wanted him back in Riverrun. I sent him to King's Landing because Catelyn Stark wanted him in King's Landing. Either way, you can absolve yourself of the crime.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Especially in these confusing times, you could be like, oh, I didn't get that message.
Yeah,
you
know? Edmure, so. But God, Edmure, who listens to him?
And there's one little detail when they are being force marched into Harrenhal with, you know, behind the Zorse, is that Brienne says, look, there's the direwolf sigil flying high on the walls of Harrenhal. And Jaime says, yeah, there's your direwolf. And then he says, and those are heads on each side, or, you know, those are heads surrounding it. And I just wondered if there's any significance to that, or, you know, or they, that the fact that these heads are flanking the direwolf flag, or are they possibly Lannister heads from Roose's takeover?
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought Jaime was simply saying the Starks are no better than anyone else in this. They behead people and put their heads on spikes just like everybody else. Don't feel any loyalty to these people, especially. That's how I took that. But maybe it meant something specific about the Starks. Yeah. I don't know.
No, what you say makes sense. It does. Yeah, it makes sense. I just want to say, are we possibly seeing the tides of a new Jaime emerging here? I mean, he tries to die, but Brienne pulls him out of it with the whole, you know, Kraven thing, live, get revenge. And we've seen him now protect Brienne twice. And this second time here, he drew a beating himself where he eventually passed out from the pain of being kicked in his right arm stump.
Oh, yeah.
And at the end of the chapter, he asks Qyburn to check on Brienne. And, you know, so maybe there was sort of a death there in the field looking at the stars, and then possibly rebirth of at least a slightly less awful version of Jaime. It's too early to tell, but there are some sparks there.
That's what I was going to say. It's too early to tell, because as we made the point in this episode, and honestly, this wasn't in the notes, and I thought of it as we talked. Your explanation, I think I can credit you with this, that he is loving and loyal and kind to the people who are close to him, doesn't mean he's changed at all. He's just, yeah. Brienne has become someone to whom he's now loving and loyal, just by their shared experience. And I think that that might be all we've seen here. We haven't necessarily seen a sea change in Jaime Lannister yet.
Just a change in his connection and relationship with Brienne.
Exactly. That's what I think could be true. But as we go forward, perhaps we'll see that you're right and I'm wrong.
Yeah, you know, it's just we're seeing some things. I mean, we're seeing him see others' perspectives that maybe he was too arrogant and self-centered to consider before. Like when the brave companions laugh at him for crying over his pain, he realizes, you know, that being laughed at and mocked is something that Tyrion has dealt with his whole life. And, you know, he's probably never been humiliated before. He was born elite, handsome, athletic. So, you know, when he was given the horse urine to drink, or, you know, unable to even touch Shagwell with the sword, all while they laughed at him, you know, possibly had an effect of opening his eyes to a different perspective. But you're right. There's also the fact that he now has a new relationship with Brienne, whether he wants to or not. There's a different connection there than there was before.
But the thing you said about Tyrion, still his empathy is still confined to those he loves, you know.
Yes, true.
Potentially. True. Which I think is true of all of us to a certain extent. I think from Jaime's character you sense that it's a very strict cutoff. Outside of the circle of loved ones, he doesn't care about anyone at all.
Right. Yeah. That's true.
Where do we go next, McKelly?
Well, next week we are going to visit Jaime's little brother Tyrion.
Oh, I love Tyrion.
Yes, he scopes out the damage from the Battle of Blackwater. He has a run-in with an old friend, and he gets marital advice from his dad.
Always welcome. If you could do what Bowie Jones did and leave us a review, that would help spread the word, and we'd be incredibly grateful. Indeed. If you could buy some merchandise at ghostsofharrenhal.threadless.com, you'll find the t-shirts are only $14.
Right now, anyway.
Right now. Listen live, yeah? If you could buy a cup of Arbor Gold at buymeacoffee.com/ghostharrenhal, that would help us keep the thing afloat. And you could even consider becoming a sustainer at the Knight of the Realm or Lord Paramount level, and that would really benefit you too, because there are super cool perks.
Yes, well said, well said. And of course, you could reach us at ghost.harrenhal@gmail.com. You can go out and follow us on Twitter at ghostharrenhal. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and let me just say how much I'm enjoying the Discord conversations these days. I just tweeted out today how much I love our Discord community because we have so much fun there. So you can always join our Discord server. And of course, we are also out on YouTube. Please remember to go subscribe to us on YouTube. It will really help us out with some things we want to do.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.